In December of 1606, three small ships, the Susan Constant, the Godspeed, and the Discovery, drifted away from their moorings on the River Thames in London and began a voyage that would fundamentally alter the course of North American history. Aboard these vessels, a collection of 144 men and boys pressed together in cramped, unsanitary conditions, embarking on a mission that was part commercial venture, part national ambition, and part desperate gamble. They carried with them the hopes of investors who had pooled their money into the Virginia Company of London, a joint stock enterprise chartered by King James I with the explicit goal of establishing an English colony in the Chesapeake region of North America. What they did not carry, however, was any real understanding of what awaited them on the far side of the Atlantic Ocean. The founding of Jamestown would become one of the most harrowing and consequential episodes in early American history, a story of catastrophic miscalculation, staggering human suffering, unexpected survival, and the fragile roots of what would eventually grow into British America. The settlement that barely survived its first years would ultimately become the first permanent English colony in North America, but that outcome was anything but certain as those three small vessels fought against winter gales and the vast, indifferent expanse of the sea. The English had been slow to join the race for New World colonies. Throughout the 16th century, Spain had built a vast and wealthy empire in the Americas, extracting enormous quantities of gold and silver from Mexico and Peru and establishing a network of missions, settlements, and administrative centers that stretched from Florida to the southern tip of South America. The French had established a foothold in Canada, and the Dutch were beginning to explore commercial opportunities along the Hudson River. England, by contrast, had experienced a series of failed colonial experiments, from the lost colony of Roanoke in the 1580s to various abortive attempts in Newfoundland and elsewhere. But by the early years of the 17th century, a combination of factors had converged to make another English colonial attempt not merely desirable but politically and economically necessary. The English population was growing, and the domestic economy struggled to absorb the increasing number of young men who could not find steady work or land of their own. The principle of primogeniture, by which eldest sons inherited family estates while younger sons received little, had created a class of restless, ambitious men with few prospects at home. At the same time, English merchants and aristocrats had watched with envy as Spanish galleons carried staggering wealth back to Seville year after year. If England could establish its own American colonies, perhaps it too could tap into the riches of the New World, not only precious metals but also valuable commodities like timber, furs, and agricultural products that could be sold for profit in European markets. The Virginia Company of London, granted its charter in April of 1606, was designed to achieve these multiple goals. Unlike the Spanish model of direct royal control, the Virginia Company operated as a joint stock enterprise, meaning that investors purchased shares and expected to receive a portion of any profits the colony generated. This was a distinctly English approach to colonization, one that placed the financial risk and potential reward in the hands of private investors rather than the crown. The company's charter granted it the authority to establish a colony somewhere along the coast of North America between what is now Cape Fear and the Hudson River, and it promised the colonists who went to Virginia that they would enjoy the same rights and liberties as Englishmen who remained at home. This promise of English liberties would become a recurring theme in the history of British America, though its application would prove uneven and contested in practice. The king, for his part, retained ultimate sovereignty over the colony but outsourced the costs and management of the enterprise to the company's investors and leaders. It was a pragmatic arrangement, but one that would also produce considerable friction in the years ahead as the colony struggled to survive and the company's expectations collided with the harsh realities of the American landscape. The fleet departed from London in late December, a poor time of year to begin an Atlantic crossing. The ships encountered fierce storms that separated them and damaged rigging and supplies.